This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Robert Nolan. Bob is the founding partner of Halyard Capital and has had just a magnificent career. He's going to talk to us about his work in founding his fund, the funds, and then what he's doing now as he still works with the funds and does other things, pursues other interests too, and sort of get a sense of, you know, what life looks like after monumental success and striving still. Bob, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Yes, Scott, and happy to be with you this afternoon here in the East. Yes, Bob Nolan, as Scott introduced me, founding partner of Halyard Capital. By background, I spent the last 20 years in private equity, prior to that 20 years in investment banking, and originally practiced law for 3 years before those two experiences. So I've been in and around transactions for quite some time.
Well, you're smart enough to get out of law and into private equity. Talk a little bit about your career as a fund leader, founding the fund. Give us a little bit of a sense of that excitement, anxiety, the different parts of getting that going.
Well, in a lot of regard, I was quite fortunate at the outset. Having spent 20 years in investment banking, I had received a call from an executive search firm while I was running a technology, media, and telecommunications investment banking group for CIBC Oppenheimer. And the executive search firm asked me whether or not I would like to be the leader of an investment banking effort in New York for Bank of Montreal. And my advice to them, this was in maybe late 99, my advice to them was that they'd be better served if they wanted to create a merchant banking effort from which they could also derive investment banking activity and revenue. And I would be interested in that type of formation, but really had little interest in going off and creating what I thought would be one more middle market effort in investment banking land at that time. In any event, they took me up on my offer to look at a merchant banking arrangement. And after a short period of time, we agreed that we would come in and create Halyard Capital within and under the auspices of Bank of Montreal. Bank of Montreal was our sole LP. Alongside the GP money, I brought six professionals with me, and we created Halyard Capital, which was originally a $350 million fund. Plus, they put up another $150 million of third-party fund capital, which meant that we deployed capital to other funds, 15 in total, in order for the bank to be able to call on them and obviously try and generate business for the bank itself. Well, at the same time, it gave us potential co-investment opportunities with all these different funds that we were capitalizing. So I had both a direct effort in the form of higher capital as well as an indirect effort in the form of the fund of funds. And then a year into that experience, the bank came to me and asked if I would take over their existing merchant banking effort, which had been an LBO fund that was run out of both Toronto and Chicago, plus a mezzanine fund that we created in Chicago. Bank of Montreal owns Harris Bank, and they created a mezzanine fund there as well. And then they had probably 75 investments in other third-party funds. So all in, I suddenly became head of their merchant bank, and we had billions of dollars of capital already exposed, let alone what we had the right to put forward in the future. Halyard was an effort run out of New York that I remained a managing partner of, but it was one of a panoply of funds that was operated at the time for Bank of Montreal. And then,
what a fascinating.
Go ahead.
But what a fascinating career. What a fascinating world. I mean, we got a Harris Bank branch right down the block from us. But what a fascinating thing to see the evolution of going from a relatively small, but not that small fund, $300 to $500 million, into all of a sudden running billions through this variety of funds. What a fascinating situation.
Well, it was, when you think about it, it was incredibly fortunate. We were able to help them at a time where they needed some structure and help. And we created basically the merchant banking effort at BMO in a much more disciplined fashion. We held quarterly board meetings, which the CEO and the CFO of the bank attended. So I would go up to Toronto and do quarterly merchant bank board meetings with them and the others who we assigned to that board. And so there was complete, you know, review of the portfolio every quarter. And of course, it's a publicly held company. So the reporting mechanisms within, you know, are required every quarter. So it was, for me, it was great because it was a training program too. I became quite adept at navigating the world of private equity and doing so inside of a public, publicly held institution. And then from there, Scott, if we fast forward, just in 2006, when we were raising our second fund for Halyard Capital, I just knew that in order to raise outside capital, we had to spin out from under the bank, because otherwise limited partners will look a bit askance at whether or not the objectives that the investing I was doing on behalf of Halyard as it existed within BMO was also to facilitate some of BMO's needs or objectives as opposed to just the LP return. So just to clear any consideration of a conflict, I spun Halyard out and we became independent in 2006, and Bank of Montreal became my largest investor in the second fund as we became independent.
Well, congratulations, and it's a great compliment when the people you've been partnering with for a long time continue and then want to keep on investing with you. Is probably the greatest compliment as somebody that runs funds and invests and manages private equity investments. Let me ask you, you've had this great career. So many people that reach the pinnacle of success, then as they sort of start to let somebody else take over management of some of the funds, have to find them on their own selves and figure out what they're going to excel at in this sort of next part of their professional career. And you've got yourself involved in a variety of different things. Take a moment and talk to us about some of the things that you're engaging in now and how you keep yourself striving and engaged and loving what you do.
Well, I think, and you'll appreciate this as will most people on the call, the key to life at any age is to, you know, develop and maintain an insatiable curiosity. And private equity in the investing field affords that because it's an ever-changing landscape and affords you the opportunity to be, you know, to at least pursue some of your passions in terms of fields that you believe are going to be fruitful in the future. As to the way I approached it, I don't think anyone necessarily does it perfectly, but I wanted to have a balance going forward in my life of both private effort and more pro bono effort in my life. And so I took on, I stepped back to my managing partner role at Halyard and became founding partner, which is my title today. But I'm not responsible for the day-to-day activities, which I'm forever thankful for. And I've also, in passing, taken on responsibilities as a senior advisor to a few other groups, one of which is Brown Brothers Harriman, which you probably know is a well-known wealth manager. They have a burgeoning private equity practice. And so I serve as a senior advisor to them. I've brought them some transactions in which they committed capital, and I sit on the board of one of their portfolio companies. Then I am also a senior advisor to a group called Mission OG Funds. And Mission OG is located in Philadelphia. They primarily invest in financial technology, and in technology-enabled service companies. And I've been working with them for the past 2 years as a senior advisor as well. And then lastly, I'm an advisor to a group called Connecticut Innovations. I reside in Connecticut. I'm a native of Connecticut. And in an effort to get to generate more commerce and job creation in Connecticut, Connecticut Innovations is a state-funded venture pool of capital, which deploys capital alongside entrepreneurial endeavors that are based in Connecticut. And so I've helped them review a number of opportunities. Again, I sit on one of their company boards. And to me, that's more pro bono work, and it affords me an opportunity to give back to my, you know, quite honestly, the state I've grown up in. And then lastly, like most people, I've been active at my alma mater, Georgetown University. I sit on their the board of advisors to the McDonough Business School, which I have for years. And I also run their athletics committee, as well as helping my law school, Fordham Law School, where I'm on their their entrepreneurial law advisory clinic.
So, in any case, the most important question. I mean, John Thompson, pretty much an irreplaceable coach, magnificent. How do you replace at Georgetown someone like a John Thompson, a Patrick Ewing, a Dikembe Mutombo?
Well, as you know, Patrick is now the coach of the Hoyas. He didn't have any head coaching experience. We took the job. So there's a bit of on-the-job training for Patrick. I don't think you can replace an icon like John Thompson. John Thompson was an icon not only at Georgetown, but the city of Washington, D.C. He was an absolute icon to that community. And then we could, of course, argue that he's probably one of the better-known African-American icons in the U.S., albeit related to sports. But he stood for more than sports. And I don't know that you replace someone like that because he was unique to the time in which he became so vital to the Georgetown program. And I think what you do is you try and honor the legacy. I don't think you can ever replicate it.
I think that's a great way to put it, actually. And it, Brown Brothers, what a fascinating firm. This was a big bolts firm, but has maintained a great presence. It must be fun for you to be able to be a senior advisor with them, to work with newer funds, doing fintech type of stuff. But it must be a lot of fun and less stressful and sometimes than just running all the funds that you've run. I mean, it must be kind of fun to be at this point a senior advisor to things, contributing as a mentor to some things.
Well, you hit it on the head, Scott. I mean, there is no doubt it's more fun. It's less stressful, as you said. Look, if I put my name on the line, though, regarding supporting a given investment or even proposing an investment, then I take that quite seriously, as you would expect, and get every bit as involved as I would had it been at Halyard or at a separate endeavor. But I totally agree. It has been, it's like the... the second breath of life, because I'm around young people. And let's be honest, as you begin to age, and I'll accept the fact that I am aging a bit, you steal energy from the young every time you deal with them. So being in and around them and gaining their energy alongside, my own curiosity. Yes, I may have more experience in given transaction or structures, but having the opportunity to work along, dedicated, passionate, energetic, just devoted professionals is great every day that I do so. So, yes, I'm quite blessed in that regard.
Well, this is the great secret of aging well, and you can't ever admit this to the younger people we work with, is that we gain our strength and energy from the young people we work with, like our producer and others, the magnificent young people that we deal with every single day. That keeps us feeling at least rationally young, Bob. It's hard, but at least we feel rationally young because we're involved with so many, working closely with so many brilliant young people that have this great work ethic and great drive and a different level of skill set than we will ever have. You're absolutely right. You hit it so well.
You'll like this, Scott. There's an old saying that goes something like this, that good judgment comes from experience and experience comes from bad judgment. And of course, you'd rather that bad judgment experience was felt by someone else and that you learned at a distance rather than you have to experience it yourself. So I'm a big believer in, look, my experience can help avoid some issues that probably I had to encounter, unfortunately. But I think more importantly, I just think that there are ways in which the passage of time has enabled you to, let's just say, contrast and clarify some rather basic principles about how better to invest and what's valuable in any investment. And of course, as you know, as private equity investors, nothing's more important than the management team. As they always say, a good management team can salvage a bad business, but a bad management team can absolutely sabotage a good business. So getting management right is always, one, two, and three of any private equity.
Right. If you get the people right, you get leadership right, you could pivot and solve a lot of problems. Or if you don't get people and leadership right, you almost can get lost in a phone booth, quite frankly. You can get lost in a you could still do okay in a magnificent niche, a magnificent area, but it is a lot harder when anything changes to do well without a great management team and great leadership. So could not agree with you more. Bob, I want to thank you for joining us today on the Becker Private Equity Podcast. What a great pleasure for us to get a chance to visit with you and hear about your career and what you've done and what you're doing now. I mean, I love the stories of people that have been able to maintain doing what they're doing at a high level and transition and doing other interesting things that keep them vibrant and thriving. It just is, it's inspiring and magnificent. Thank you, Bob.
Well, thank you, Scott, for all your kind words. You have a great day.